Okay, so welcome to the first of our weeknight series that maybe we'll try to do every other week. We'll see how it goes. We'll see, based on demand, what everyone would like, what works for everyone. I just want to thank Chaim for, I know you were kind of put on this, so thanks for being in charge and working this out. So in general, we'll talk about whatever anyone wants to talk about. If anyone has any suggestions, please come to me afterwards and we'll talk about whatever. For this first week, I figured we would talk about something that was on my mind that week. There were a few people that came over to me that week and either asked me something related to an Ayin Hara or said, Bli Ayin Hara, Poo Poo Poo, Kan Ayin Hara, all these different things. And it got me so curious, what exactly is it about? And I found there are really two types of views when it comes to this. There are some people who literally live their lives based all on Ayin Hara. Everything is about not pouring this way, not stepping over people, not looking at shadows, stepping on cracks, whatever it is. There's that approach to Ayin Hara. But there's also the other approach of, Ayin Hara, come on, that's not a real thing. What is that? We don't believe in that. What are we doing? So these are the two approaches that I found to be most common. So I figured, let's try to see what we believe in Judaism. If we look at source number one, it's the encyclopedia definition of the evil eye. So it says, glance believed to have the ability to cause injury or death to those whom it befalls. And if we skip a few lines, it says it occurred in ancient Greece, Rome, in Jewish, Islamic, Buddhist, and Hindu traditions, and in different folk societies. So we see that this concept of the evil eye appears in a lot of other things than Judaism. It's not just that it applies in our religion and that's it, but it applies in many different things. So first, we have to figure out, do Jews believe in it? Is this a real thing? Is this something that we really take as a value? How do we view Ayin Hara? So we're going to break this shiur into three or four parts. First thing we're going to do is determine whether we believe in it in Judaism, whether it's a real thing, whether we really acknowledge that the Ayin Hara exists. The second thing we're going to do is, if it really does exist, how strong is it? Who does it apply to? Number three, does this concept appear in halacha at all? Does it impact anything we actually do on a day-to-day basis? And number four, and most importantly, we are going to try to define exactly what it is. Because we always hear about it and we know the Ayin Hara this, the Ayin Hara that, but it's very hard to put our finger on exactly what it is, and we're going to suggest a few different approaches as to what exactly it is. So let's get started. Anyone who wants to say that the Ayin Hara does not exist has not looked through Chazal. The Ayin Hara is brought up in many different sources throughout Chazal, and we are just going to highlight a few of them. If we look in Bereshis and Parshas Vayera, so we all know the story of Sarah, Avraham, and Hagar, how Avraham and Sarah can't have children. So Sarah finally says, you know what? Go be with our maidservant Hagar, have some kids through her. So they go together and they have Yishmael. Finally, Sarah becomes pregnant and has Yitzhak. So as Yitzhak's growing up, Sarah says, we can't have Yishmael in the house. It can't work out this way. They have to leave. So the pasuk tells us, Vayashkim Avram Baboker, in source number two. So Avram woke up early in the morning and he took bread and he took a bottle of water. And he gave it to Hagar on her shoulder. And he gave her the kid. He gave her Yishmael. And he sent her off on her way to the desert. So Rashi picks up on the interesting point in the pasuk, because the pasuk says that Avram gave Hagar bread and water to put on her shoulder. And then it says the Eshayeled. So it seems that the boy also went on her shoulder. Why couldn't Yishmael walk? He was old enough to walk. Why couldn't he walk? So Rashi says, that's Hayeled, source number three. Af Hayeled Sham al Shechma. Even the kid went on her shoulder. Why? Shehechnisa bo Sara ayin hara, va'achazto chama v'lo yachol lelech baragot. Gesara put some sort of ayin hara on Yishmael and Hagar, and because of this ayin hara, he was no longer able to walk. Wow. And it's pretty clear. I think it exists. So, Sarah put some sort of Ayin Hara. We don't know exactly what it is, but from this context, it seems something related to jealousy, something related to negative feelings. Sarah put something on Yishmael and took away his ability to walk. Okay? Rashi later on in Sefer Bereshis, Torah is telling us the story of Yosef and his brothers. Yosef gets sold down to Mitzrayim and eventually becomes second in command, becomes the chief of economy, sets up this whole elaborate plan to sustain the world. How they are going to have enough food despite the years of famine. And eventually everyone becomes hungry. So Yaakov and his 11 sons, minus Yosef, well, 12 minus Yosef, are very hungry. And Yaakov says, you guys need to go down to Mitzrayim to get us some food. So he sends 10 of them down. He doesn't send Yosef Adasi because he's not there, and he doesn't want to send Binyamin because he wants to keep all of the kids of Rachel, or whatever he has left of Rachel, safe. So he sends down the 10 kids, and Rashi explains in source number 4 that Yaakov gave the sons specific instructions on how to go. He said, Matminim atzmon shelo yakirum. Hide so people won't recognize you. Make sure that you guys are not all going through the same entrance. If you see 10 tall, good-looking guys walking through the same exact entrance, that's not going to be good for you guys. Why not, says Rashi? Why? You guys are all tall, handsome, strong. If you guys all walk in through the same entrance, people are going to start to put some sort of ayin hara on you, and it's not going to be good. Again, we don't know exactly what this means, but Rashi again brings it up in Sefer Bereishis. Now, let's look at source number 5. It's Mishnayos, source number 5 and 6 are two Mishnayos in Pirkei Avos that say very interesting things. Mishnah in source number 5 says, Ezo hi derech ra'a sheyisrachek mimena ha'adam. So Pirkei Avos, the ethics of our fathers, discussing the way that we're supposed to live. And it says, what's the bad way? What's the way that we are not supposed to live? Rabbi Eliezer Omer ayin ra'a. We're not supposed to have an ayin ra'a. Rabbi Yeshua Omer chaver ra'a. Rabbi Yossi Omer shachin ra'a. Rabbi Shimon Omer halova ve'eno mishalim. So, a bad neighbor, a bad friend, not paying back loans. But the first one, Rabbi Eliezer Omer ayin ra'a. Seems related to what we're talking about. Seems jealousy related. Not supposed to be jealous. Source number 6, two Mishnayos later, says Rabbi Yeshua Omer Ayin Hara V'Yetzer Hara V'Sinas Habrios Motzien Es Ha'adam Min Ha'olam. The Ayin Hara, which again we're not 100% sure what that means right now, the Yetzer Hara and Sinas Habrios, hating other people, removes us from this world. So we see that Ayin Hara is brought up in many sources. I forgot to mention in the beginning, if you guys have any questions or comments, please stop me at any time and we will discuss. So we see from these Mishnayos that this Ayin Hara, Ayin Ra, we're going to have to see if there's a difference between the two, is a real thing and is something that is destructive and is something that we should not live with. So from this context, again, it seems that it's something related to jealousy. When there's some jealousy going on for whatever reason, somehow this creates something which is destructive. Again, we don't know what it is just yet, but what we're just trying to prove over here is just that it exists and that it is pretty strong. If we look at number 7, I didn't mean to tie it into this week's Parsha, but there happen to be a bunch of sources in this week's Parsha that relate to this idea. A Medrash in this week's Parsha says something fascinating. Medrash talks about the fact we know in this week's Parsha the Egel HaZav comes, and what happens immediately after that? Moshe has the Luchos up there with Hashem, and he comes down and he sees what's happening, and they shatter. Throws them down, they drop, whatever it is. The first Luchos are no good. Moshe goes up and gets the second set of Luchos, and that's the set that lasts. So the Medrash says something incredible. Why is it that the first set of Luchos did not last, but the second set of Luchos did? What was special about the first set as opposed to the second set? Sorry, the second set as opposed to the first set? Let's look at the underlying line, source number 7. It says, HaLuchos Rishonos Al Shenasnu Bepumbei Lefichach Shalta Bahem Ayin Hara V'Nishtabru. Because the first set of Luchos were given with such publicity, such fanfare, in such a public setting, there was some sort of Ayin Hara on them and they broke. V'kan Amar Le HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and because of this Hashem said, Ein Lecha Yofe Min HaTznius. Nothing's better than being more low-key, more hidden. Tznius is so important, and the first Luchos were destroyed because of the fanfare that was given around it. So since the second Luchos were given in a more quiet way, with less people around, with less fanfare, that made it that those were able to last. But the first ones were not able to last because of the fanfare they received. Wow. The Luchos being destroyed because of the Ayin Hara. Can you imagine? That's crazy. The Luchos. This is the Torah from Hashem. Being destroyed because there's some sort of Ayin Hara. Unbelievable. And now just the last of these sources. Sources number 8 and 9 from the first Pasuk in this week's Parsha. The Parsha says, it starts off, Kisisa es rosh b'nei Yisrael ufkudeihem, with the Machatzis HaShekel. Hashem wanted to count the Jews, but he didn't want to actually count them by number. So everyone gave a half shekel in order to contribute to the count. So the question is, why didn't he just count them? Why couldn't he just say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6? Why did he choose to do this Machatzis HaShekel? Rashi explains on the words, V'lo yeh behem negef, so it will save them from danger. Shehaminyan sholeit bo ayin hara, v'hadavar bo li olam, kimo shematzinu bimei David. is when you count things individually. Something that's counted, there's some sort of ayin hara on it. That's the source. This is a much bigger topic, which we're not going to deal with right now, but this is the source for when people are counting not one, not two, not three, or for a minyan, Hoshia es hamecha. They don't want to count by number because there's some sort of ayin hara that goes into this. So as we see clearly, anyone who says that ayin hara, shma ayin hara doesn't exist, they're just being ignorant. Clearly the ayin hara exists, and our job is going to be to figure out what exactly it is. So now that we've established that it exists, how strong is it? We saw that it destroyed the first set of luchos, which is pretty incredible. But how strong is it, and who does it affect? Let's see what the Gemaras have to say. If we look at source number 10, it's a pretty scary Gemara in Bava Metzia on Daf Kuf Zayin Amud Beis. The Gemara says, if we just look at the last line, second to last word on the last on the first line, well, there only are two lines, so the second to last word on the line, it says, Omar, so Rav says, Tishin v'tisha b'ayin hara v'echad b'derech eretz. He walked into a cemetery and there were 100 people that were dead. There were 100 graves there, 100 bodies that were there. And he says 99 of them died from ayin hara, and one of them died from natural causes. That's pretty intense. So we see it's extremely destructive. It's not just that it's whatever it is, whatever people might think it is. It's extremely destructive. And if we look at source number 11, we'll see something a little bit different, but a little absolutely wild about who it impacts. So far, we've seen that ayin hara exists and that it's pretty powerful. And now we are going to discuss who it impacts. So this, we are going to read a lot of this source because this is where we will begin to learn a little bit more about maybe what it is. Gemara tells a very strange story. Rabbi Yochanan was a very good-looking man. And Rabbi Yochanan hava rogil de hava ka'azil v'yosev asha'ari de tzvila. Rabbi Yochanan would wait outside of the mikvah. Women would go to the mikvah and Rabbi Yochanan would wait outside. Why? Because when they would leave the mikvah on their way to go see their husbands, they would get to see his face. And because they'll see this image before they go back to their husbands, they'll be zocha to have beautiful children. What exactly this means, I'm not 100% sure. Something I cannot fully understand and I cannot explain. So the Gemara says, Amrei le Rabbanan. The Rabbanan said to him, Lo ka mistapi mar me'ein abisha. Are you not worried about the ayin hara? All these people are going to be seeing how good looking you are and how nice you are, how attractive you are. You're not worried that people are going to start getting a little jealous? You're not worried that people are going to look at you and say, hey, what's this guy doing? What's he all about? Why is he so full of himself? You're not worried about these destructive forces? Amar lehu, Rabbi Yochanan said to them, Ana mizara de Yosef ka'asina. I come from the progeny of Yosef HaTzadik. I'm of the offspring of Yosef HaTzadik. Delo shalta ba'in abisha. And the ayin hara does not impact me. It has no impact on this offspring of Yosef. And since I am from Yosef, the ayin hara means nothing to me. Why? Dechsev, it says in Bereshis, Bein poras Yosef, Bein poras alayayin. I mean Yosef, the good one, Yosef, the beautiful one. The Amar Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Abba says, Al tikrei alayayin, ela olayayin. The way we have to read this pasuk is that not that he's nice to the eye, it's that he's above the eye. The ayin hara does not impact him. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Amar Mehacha. They learn out from a different place. In Parshas Vayechi, Yaakov gives all the brachos to the brothers, and he gives the bracha to Yosef's children, Menashe and Ephraim. And we say it all the time, Hamal Chagol Simi Korah. And in that paragraph, it says, V'yidgu larov bekerev haaretz. That they're considered like fish. They should be like fish. So comes the Gemara and says, Ma dagim shebeyam, mayim mechasim aleihem, v'ein ayin hara sholetes bahem. Just as fish in the sea, the water's covering them, so the ayin hara can't impact them because there's a border between them and everyone else. Avzaro shel Yosef ein ayin hara sholetes bahem. So too, the progeny of Yosef cannot be impacted by the ayin hara. Okay, so we have two reasons so far for Yosef not being impacted. Number one is the pasuk of bein paras Yosef bein paras alei ayin, which we're interpreting as olei ayin. They're above the eye. And second is that they're like the fish, where they're not impacted by the ayin hara because they're covered by this layer of water. Now a third reason, the eye that does not want to take what doesn't belong to it, the eye that didn't want to take what it doesn't have, the ayin hara will not impact it. Yosef didn't take what wasn't his. He didn't go with Eshes Potiphar when he had the chance. He could have gone and sinned with Eshes Potiphar, but he chose not to. He was able to control himself, so the ayin hara will not control him. The ayin hara has no impact over him. So Yosef and his offsprings are free from this ayin hara. What exactly does this mean? Yes, the Gemara just gave us reasons, but what does this have to do with anything? How is this fair? What is going on? So before we go into the million-dollar question of what exactly is the ayin hara, we're just going to see what impact this idea has in halacha. So we look at source number 12. So a lot of times in shul, when there's a simcha especially, so there's a lot of aliyahs that need to be given out. You have the father, you have the grandfather, you have the brothers, you have the uncles, you have all this stuff. And we're very careful not to give two brothers or a father and a son one aliyah after the other. Why? Who cares? Says the Shulchan Aruch. Yecholim likros beiz achim ze'achar zeh ve'aben achar ha'av. You're able to give two brothers aliyahs right after each other, and you're able to give a father and a son an aliyah right after another. Ve'ein manichim ela b'shvil ayin hara. But we don't do it because of ayin hara. And then he says, goes on and says, even if one's shvi and one's master, we don't call him up because of ayin hara, but we see that the ayin hara plays a role here. Says the Mishnah Berurah in source number 13, Perish min ha-din ein shum chashash iser. It's not really usher to have two brothers go after each other. Therefore, if you actually did it, you don't need to make him go down. But ideally, we try to avoid this because of ayin hara. So, what the idea probably is, no problem at all. So, what the idea probably is that when two brothers or two people from the same family get an aliyah right after one after the other, we're afraid that people are going to be looking around and they're going to be saying, oh, what's this family? They're so chashuv. Oh, so nice, so great. People will get a little bit jealous of them, and that will cause the ayin hara. So to avoid that, we just say that don't give two brothers aliyahs right after one another. So just to catch you up, all we've done so far, that's no problem. All we've done so far is we've just established from a lot of different sources in Chazal that ayin hara is a real thing, and it could potentially be destructive. And we saw that the progeny of Yosef are not impacted for one of a few reasons, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And we're just seeing the impact that this has in halacha. So we just saw that we try not to give two brothers aliyahs one after the other because of the ayin hara. We're afraid that people are going to look and say, what makes this family so special? Why are they so great? And that will cause an ayin hara to come. There are a few other sources in halacha which discuss the ayin hara. One is, in a case where there are two chasanim, there are two weddings going on at the same time in the same place, money saver, I guess. We could make two separate brachos for each of them, but we only do one because of the ayin hara. Okay, that one's not so practical for us. But the last one, in source number 14, Rav Avadya Yosef in the Yabia Omer explains another reason why we break the glass under the chuppah. It's not just for the reason that we all know of, that it's to remember the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. Generally, people like to say, since we're always supposed to remember the Chorban, we're not supposed to have a full simcha without the Beis HaMikdash. So we like to break the glass to remember, even though this is such a beautiful occasion, we're still missing something. But Rav Avadya gives another reason that while this is all going on and everyone's really looking at you in such a way, we break the glass to remind us a kind of bli ayin hara, whatever that means, which we're going to have to discuss. So we see that it does have an impact in certain areas of halacha, and we see that it certainly does exist. And now we are finally up to the question we have all been waiting for, which is, what is it? How does it work? What is it? Is it really as powerful as we think it is? So we're going to suggest three approaches to the ayin hara, and through each of them, I think different yesodos come out and different ideas come out. And we may pick a favorite, but everyone, to each their own, everyone can pick what they feel is right. So, in sources 15 and 16, Rabbeinu Yonah on Pirkei Avos, on the Mishnayos that we saw earlier, and the Chazon Ish, explain that the Ayin Hara works through some sort of metaphysics. When I have negative thoughts about someone, or when someone has negative thoughts about me, somehow, I don't fully understand this, somehow it impacts my life physically. It actually impacts the way I live. When someone has these negative thoughts about me, it actually has a real impact on me. If we look at source number 16, it says, Ki ya'ada v'machashavto humaniya gormim nistarim ba'olam ha'maiso. A person through his thoughts can actually impact the way I live my life. Because someone has negative thoughts about me, they can actually cause bad things to happen to me. And Rabbeinu Yonah says a similar thing, and the Chazon Ish says this pretty explicitly. I don't know if this is what they're holding, but they're just trying to explain what it is. But it works through some sort of physics situation. I don't know exactly how it works. If we have any physicists here, please let me know. Chaim, you know how this works? I can't figure it out. But it works through some sort of metaphysics that thoughts can actually impact us. So this is the first pshat in what Ayin Hara is. So when someone thinks negatively of us, or when someone doesn't like us, probably if they're jealous of us, so they can actually impact our life. So what does it mean that Yosef is not impacted by this? It means Yosef flies under the radar. Like they're just like the fish, they're underwater, so they're also under the radar, so people don't really think about them too much. I guess that's what it would have to mean. This pshat, I definitely don't really like it so much, and many others that don't like it at all, for the following reason. We believe in a God that's just. We believe in a God that's fair. I and everyone else have their own cheshbonos with Hashem. We go out of our way on vacations to try to keep kosher. We wake up early for minyan. We do this, we do that. We do all these different things for Avodas Hashem. We come to a shir on a Tuesday night when it's raining. Not easy stuff. And we each have our own cheshbonos, and we each deserve whatever it is that we deserve. We all have our own cheshbonos with Hashem. To now say that someone who doesn't like me can come and think negatively and impact the way I live and actually have a real impact on me, that's not the way God works. It doesn't make so much sense. It doesn't really fit. Why is it fair that I'm working all day to work towards my Avodas Hashem? I'm working, I'm setting time aside time to learn, helping my kids grow in their Yiddishkeit, helping myself grow in my Yiddishkeit. And because one person has negative things to say about me because they're a little jealous of me, that makes it that my life is going to be impacted? That doesn't seem to make so much sense. That's not so fair. So that's why many reject this pshat, and I think we're going to try to veer away from this pshat. But luckily, we have two other pshatim as to what the Ayin Hara is. So the second pshat we are going to deal with comes from the Michtav Me'Eliyahu. That's Rabbi Dessler, Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler. He lived in the late 1800s, early 1900s. He was the Mashkiach and Panovich. Tremendous Baal Machshava, Baal Musar. He was really a tremendous individual. And this is in source number 17. And he says, really, Ayin Hara is brought upon by the person who is getting impacted by the Ayin Hara. What does that mean? When someone's showy, when someone's acting flashy, when someone's showing off and being arrogant, it causes things to happen. What happens? It's not that all of a sudden these forces come and impact us. That's not what happens. What happens is that God looks at our situation. He looks at what we have and he says, you know what? This person's making a point. He's saying, I don't think this person deserves what he has, or he thinks he deserves what he has. Let's look at the books. Let's see if this is true. Let's see if he really does deserve everything that he has. So God opens up the Midas HaDin books, and he looks at us, and he says, maybe this person doesn't necessarily deserve exactly what he has. When we're being humble and we're hiding, not hiding our stuff, but when we're being tanua, when we're keeping things to ourselves and not showing off in everyone's faces, we kind of fly under the radar. And, you know, we have what we have, even if we don't necessarily deserve everything that we have, whatever that means, you know, we kind of go with the flow. But once it gets pointed out, and once people are upset about it, Hashem has a new Midas HaDin. He has a new judgment. And I definitely do not want to be judged based on my own merits. I know good things happen to bad people, bad things happen to good people, that is a separate question. But if we're really getting what we deserve, I'm probably not going to be doing too well. So, you know, we'd like to stay away from that. And that's what the Ayin Hara is. Let's look at a few lines inside the underlined part. It says, "Biarnu ashe yitachinu nitba b'midas hadin, b'pneshehu garam." The guy who was showy, the guy who was flashy, he caused this to happen. He caused a new midas hadin. Sharishon yikanebo. He caused the first guy to become jealous. So this caused a whole new din. Hare baduku menusehu shemi she'eno chai ba'ad atzmo klal v'hu nosein v'lo notel v'chol inyanav ish kaze eno me'orer kinaklal. But if someone's always being a giver and not a taker, if someone's careful to always be humble and use what he has in the right ways, then this won't impact him. And this is what it means, says the Michtav Me'Eliyahu, that the progeny of Yosef are not impacted. Yosef came from humble beginnings. Yosef was a very humble man. Yosef didn't want what other people had. He could have had what other people had. But again, as we mentioned before, he could have had Eishes Potiphar, but he didn't. He was happy with what he has. He was humble. So it doesn't mean necessarily that literally the offspring of Yosef are safe from the Ayin Hara. It means that anyone who adopts this type of living, this humble type of living, this type of living where you're happy with what you have, so then you will not be impacted by the Ayin Hara. Yeah?
Why does Hashem get angry at the Ayin Hara? He's talking a lot about the person who gets it. And sometimes people get an Ayin Hara, people who are not necessarily happy, they just don't like the fact that somebody else has something.
100%. That's a great question, and they talk about this. Everyone talks about this. One of the Aseres HaDibros, the last of the Aseres HaDibros, is Lo Sachmod. Those people are going to get their share too. And what we're trying to say, what I wanted to point out, you just brought it up for me, is that this does not mean that we can't live our lives. It does not mean that we're not allowed to have things. You're allowed to have a comfortable house. You're allowed to have things that you want. You're allowed to have everything you want. If you're able to have it, you can have what you want. Obviously, just like everything else in life, there's a balance. But only if you are extremely showy and whatever it is, then it will impact you. But if you're a humble person, now what does humility mean? This is also comes from this week's parsha. What does it mean to be humble? People think humble means, humility means, I don't want to get involved. I'm not someone who's going to get involved. I don't want my name on this or like, it's not, you know, just hiding in the background. But that's not what humility means. There's a pasuk, the Gemara tells us that Hashem is the ultimate anav. And it proves it from the pasuk which says that Hashem helps the widows and the orphans and those who are much less fortunate. And everyone asks the obvious question, what's the connection? The humility of God and the fact that He helps widows, orphans, and those who are less fortunate, they're two totally different points. What's the connection? So the answer is that we've been misunderstanding humility, exactly what you've been saying. Humility doesn't mean, I can't have this, or having nothing, or living on the street. That's not what humility means. Humility means acknowledging that everything that we have comes from Hashem. It means that we are realizing that, yes, we have to put in our hishtadlus, but ultimately nothing comes from us. It all comes from Hashem. And when we realize this, obviously we're going to help those who are less fortunate, because why should I have it and they don't? When we realize that everything comes from Hashem, we're going to go help the widows, we're going to go help the orphans, we're going to help those who are less fortunate. So that's what it means that Hashem's the ultimate anav because He helps them. So this by no means means that we can't live. It by no means means that we can't have what we want. Obviously there's a balance to everything, but we have to live our lives and we have to try to help others. And when we're humble, that's what's going to protect us from this ayin hara. So we're allowed to, we should donate money. We could have our name on something. Like, that's not bad. That's obviously something that's incredible. When you're giving tzedakah, you're doing chesed, when we're living the way we're supposed to be living. And it doesn't mean you have to literally hide everything and you have to say this and do that. It just means living in a way where we acknowledge that Hashem is in charge. And I think this is what people mean when they say b'li ayin hara, or what we're supposed to mean when we say b'li ayin hara. We're really trying to say that we realize that we have this, we realize that we have that. Someone just had a grandchild, k'nai nahara, we're so happy, we're so lucky. What we're realizing is that it really all comes from Hashem. When you realize that, and you don't think, kocha miyotim yadzim, it all comes from me, and you realize that everything's a bracha from Hashem, you have nothing to worry about. That's what the Mechta Meliyahu seems to be saying. And I think this is a pretty comforting thought for me, that we have to do what we gotta do. We're allowed to have what we want. You know, we have to work hard, and it works, and, you know, we're able to have, obviously with a balance like everything else. But we have to remember that Hashem is what is the cause of everything that we have. And we owe everything we have to Hashem. And by living in that type of lifestyle and helping others, we will be safe and we will be considered of the offspring of Yosef. So that is the second shot in what Ayin Hara means. The first one was this metaphysical shot that someone can impact us. And the person who's jealous is certainly going to get his. He's certainly going to get his. They are one of the Aser Sadibros, and everyone talks about how they are also going to get punished. We're just going to focus on the Ayin Hara aspect of the receiver for this shir. But you're making a very, very good point. Very, very well received. And the second shot was that it really just brings about a new Midas Hadin. So we have to remember to be humble and not flashy. What does it mean, humble, as we explained? Humility means acknowledging that Hashem has everything that we have. Hashem is really behind everything that we have. And yes, we put in our hishtadlus, and yes, we work hard. But ultimately, everything comes from Hashem. And by realizing that, of course we're going to give tzedakah. Of course we're going to do more chesed. It's natural. That makes sense. Of course we're going to do all of that. And if we live like that, we will be safe from the ayin hara. This third shot comes from Rav Soloveitchik in source number 18. Something, when I saw this, I was blown away. I've never heard of this, but this, to me, this was an extremely, extremely innovative shot, something that was really eye-opening and really comforting for me. So let's start from the third paragraph. See where I am? On the last page of the third paragraph. Says the Rav, V'inyin ayin hara barur ma'od etzli. Ayin hara is very clear to me what it is. Ki yesh anashim shechayehem tluyim kuam medas acherim. There are people who live their lives solely based on what other people think and what other people think of them. Sha'acherim yaskimu imahem, that other people agree to them. Mishab kuosam and praise them. Mifaruosam and laud them. But the second that people realize that other people don't necessarily think the world of them, that they don't necessarily approve of what they're doing, people lose all of their strength and all of their self-confidence. Because in the way we live, in the way we learn, in everything that we do, even in ruchnius type things, we have to be happy with what we're doing. We have to be excited about what we're doing. Not just with happiness, but we also need to have self-confidence. We have to realize what we have to feel good about what we're doing. And we, when we do our actions like this with the happiness that we know what we're doing is right and that other people have this approval of us and we're feeling confident about what we're doing, then we're able to do it in the best line, in the best way we can. However, but once we lose this self-confidence, once we lose this simcha of what we're doing, all of a sudden we don't begin to perform as well as we were. Because these types of people only view themselves through the way that other people view them. And they don't realize the inner strength that they have. That they are so talented at what they're doing, they're so good at what they're doing, but just because someone doesn't approve of them, it kills them. And it impacts the way they perform. Because they just can't get over it. And to these people, the ayin hara is something which is very strong. Because when someone's looking down on them and casting an ayin hara on them, someone who doesn't approve of what they're doing, immediately they lose what they're doing. So what the Rav is saying is not that this is some mystical force. It's not that it's working through some midas hadin, something that we can't understand. It's very simple. The ayin hara means that people are not approving of what we're doing and we can't handle it. And not only can't we handle it, it impacts the way we perform. Just the other week, I was just telling some of the guys that last week I was in Florida for a few days. Took the wife and kid down. It was very fun. We had a great time. And I'm very blessed this year to be able to be here, first of all, but also to be doing smicha full time. Next year, I'm going to be starting in accounting. I'm very lucky to have the ability to get to learn for most of the day, get to come here, prepare this stuff. So I was talking to someone, and they knew that I was going to Florida, and they're like, funny that you're taking a vacation, you know, like you need it. And I'm like looking at them, I'm like, wow, this is very, you know, that's okay. And I was very nice about it, you know, it was very nice. And I was thinking about it, this person clearly doesn't approve of what I'm doing, because, you know, otherwise he wouldn't have said that. And it bothered me, and I was thinking about it, and it was actually impacting the way I was like thinking that day. And then I saw this, and I realized, like, wow, this is exactly what it means. This person was giving me an ayin hara because he was not approving of what I was doing, and it was actually impacting me. And when we can live our lives not worrying about what other people think, obviously worrying about what other people think to an extent, we have to be normal and in society, and we have to obviously be nice to others. But when we're able to realize our own self-confidence, and if we do a cheshbon and realize what we're doing is right, we have to be happy with that, and we have to be able to live like that. And says the Rav, something fascinating to tie everything together, this is what it means that the offspring of Yosef are not impacted. Let's look at the last paragraph. Zos haisa kavanas Rabbi Yochanan ba'amru anamizara shel Yosef ka'asina. This is what it means when Rabbi Yochanan said, I come from the offspring of Yosef. Lav dafka shahaisa lo kabbalah hushahu migeza Yosef. Not actually that he comes literally from the offspring of Yosef. Ela shevprat zehu dom el Yosef. But in this way, he is similar to Yosef. Ki Yosef yada es kocho sav hanafshiim. Yosef knew his inner strengths. He knew what he was good at. Chayu yodim lo mitoch akara atzmis velo mitoch mara shel acherim. He knew how good he was inside. He knew he was talented. And he didn't let what other people think bother him. Ki ilulei hikir es kocho sav. Because if he were not to know his strengths, mitoch haracha shel acherim, but he only listened to what other people had to say, she b'mikra zeh haisa harachas achiv. If Yosef would have just listened to his brothers kept telling him, Yosef, you are worthless. Get your dreams out of your head. You're worth nothing. You can't accomplish anything. You can't do anything. If Yosef would have just listened to them, he wouldn't have been Yosef HaTzadik. He would have been nothing. If Yosef would have listened to the way others thought of him, he would have been nothing. So Yosef, what does it mean to be of the offspring of Yosef? It means you have to have inner self-confidence and the inner ability to realize that we are good at what we do and that if we do the proper cheshbon, and we do talk to people. We have to talk to people. Talk to those who we trust, talk to those who we look up to, and if we feel what we're doing is right after all of that, after all of that research, we have to be confident in what we're doing, and we can't let what others think impact us. And that's what it means to be of the offspring of Yosef. And obviously, everything I'm saying is so much easier said than done. It's very difficult. Just talking to a few people, once you know someone doesn't approve, and once you know someone's looking down on you, it's very difficult to keep going and to go with the same confidence that you're going with. But it's something which is very, very important. So this was a totally different pshat in Ayin Hara that I happen to have liked a lot from the Rav. So let's just summarize what we've done. Any questions before we go through this summary?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, please.
The Ayin Hara, the bit the red
in the... Oh, good question.
So I believed in it for many years, and I was told by Rav it's like a little bizarre.
Yeah.
So I
want
to know how that
changed. So there's a Tosefta. There's a Tosefta which is like the Mishnah and the Gemara, but it's a different category. We'll talk about that another time. The red bendel, they say it's Darchei Emori, that it does stem from some sort of other religious practices. So there's a big debate about what exactly it is. I was going to add this in. This would have added a whole another section to the... Oh, very nice. Adds another whole section to the shir. A lot of people are not in favor of it because they think that it's closer to that. And a fascinating proof that I saw that some people are not so happy with it is that some of these Kabbalah centers actually trademarked this red bendel. If you look it up on like these encyclopedias, it comes up in a lot of different religions. And these Kabbalah centers tried to trademark it, but you don't see them trademarking talis or tefillin or svarim or anything like that. So something's a little... I don't know enough about it to say avodah zarah or not, but the sources that I saw weren't necessarily so excited about it. But... The what? Like what? Like buying stuff before it's... Oh, wow. Right. Avachnas, that has totally different sources. Yeah. That's a different thing. Yeah, no, a lot of these things are based on the different ideas that we've said, that clearly there's something to the fact that when we incite people to be jealous of us or when we incite jealousy, so something potentially could happen, whether it's psychological, whether it's midas hadin, whatever it is. So not buying the baby carriage beforehand. I've heard a lot of people doing that. So the only thing I could really think of is that people were afraid that other people would see and get jealous, and then... But
where does the red thing come from?
Right. So the sources seem to imply that it's Darchei Emori, that it's not the ideal thing to do. But there are other... I don't know enough about everything with it, but the sources that I saw were not necessarily so pro. But I don't know if that... We can talk about it after. I'll send you a source book of what I've seen on that. But just to summarize really quick about all that we have done tonight. We did a lot, and again, thank you all so much for coming. So we started off proving that Ayin Hara does exist. We showed from many different sources in Chazal, a bunch of different psukim, Rashi, Medrash, Gemaras, that it does exist and it's pretty powerful. We showed how the offspring of Yosef are immune to this. It doesn't impact them in the slightest and they are totally okay. And then we showed how it does impact some areas of halacha. Two brothers getting aliyahs one after the other, maybe breaking the glass at the wedding, says Rav Ovadia, another reason. And we then got into what exactly the Ayin Hara is. So either it's this metaphysical thing where bad thoughts impact us, but we didn't fully understand that. We didn't really like that. There was another idea that we saw from the Michtav of Me'ilyahu, that when we're showy, when we're flashy, it brings upon a new midas hadin, which none of us want. We want to fly under the radar, and we explained that we need to be humble and not as flashy. What does humility mean? As we explained, humility means acknowledging that everything comes from Hashem. It doesn't mean that we can't live. It means that we acknowledge everything comes from Hashem, and through this realization, we will obviously help others and live in the proper way. And lastly, we saw this idea from the Rav of Soloveitchik gave this idea that Ayin Hara is really something which is kind of psychological. When we're worried about what other people are thinking, when other people don't believe in us or don't approve of what we're doing, it actually impacts the way we perform. And this is a very real thing, that aspect of it at least. I was explaining from my own personal example, and it's something much easier said than done. And all of this It's a big topic, and if anyone has any more questions, follow up, please feel free to come to me. So Bli Ayin Hara, we will pick up in 2 weeks or so, or whenever the next one is able to be. Have a great night. Thank you again for coming.